that is an organisation of absolutely unimpeachable integrity and objectivity. Until, of course, the recent campaign, when it was discovered, I think, that Paul, that you'd taken €50 out of the cash machine on the Champs-Élysées, and so couldn't possibly comment on anything. But aside from that, what's clear, our second guest here is Paul Johnson, director of the Institute for Sustainable Development.
Thank you very much, Paul. And thank you, David. And contrary to normal practice, I'm not actually going to use any slides. Well, we can see why Paul Lewis is still in a job, having just seen what David has to say about the amount of different ways there are of saving and the amount of change that's been going on. I want to start by stepping back a bit and not actually talking about any of the specifics that David mentioned, and just reflect on the following question, which is why in a sense are economists, why is it when we think about tax, that it's actually the taxation of savings that probably gets us more excited than the taxation of anything else, other than the fact we're obviously very sad. But when we wrote the Merlis Review, which we published 5 years ago now, four or five years ago now, we covered the whole of the tax system, corporate tax, income tax, national insurance, VAT and so on. We spent far longer on the taxation of savings than we spent on anything else, and possibly far longer than we spent on everything else put together. So the taxation of savings really is, in terms of constructing the overall tax system, and certainly as an economist thinking about the tax system, right at the centre of it. And I went back, actually, to look at what we said about why that's the case. So I want to start off by saying, why is the taxation of savings just so important? And there are five things that we said in the Merlis Review, which possibly are excuse for taking such an incredibly long time worrying about what we should say. The first is that the way that you tax savings actually defines the tax base. It actually just tells you what it is you're trying to tax, by which I mean, if you think of a comprehensive income tax, that is a tax on all income, whether that be earned income or the returns to anything that you've saved. So if you earn some money, you pay some tax, then you save it, and then you can pay some tax on the returns to that. That's a comprehensive income tax. Or you can have an expenditure tax where you earn some money, and if you save it, you don't pay any tax, and you only pay tax after you withdraw it in order to spend it. That's an expenditure tax. So those are two completely different bases for taxation, and those are defined essentially by the way that you treat the taxation of savings. So the way that you tax saving actually defines, in a sense, what it is that you're trying to tax. Now, the British system, of course, is kind of a bit of this, a bit of that, and something else as well. But it's so we don't have a clear base, and that's one of the problems, and one of the structural problems, and one of the complexities that we have to deal with. So that's the first one. It just defines what you're trying to tax. The second, I think, this is absolutely crucial, and that actually, in a sense, when you're thinking about actually what Paul said at the beginning about why is it. You know, that he can get tax relief at 40 or 45%, and his colleagues can only get tax relief at 20%. So what the taxation of savings does is it allows you to take account of interpersonal differences in lifetime income as opposed to annual income. So if you think about the tax system, about the tax I pay this year is dependent on the amount I earn this year. So if I earn £20,000 this year, I'll pay tax on the £10,000 of that above the personal allowance. If I earn £20,000 this year and zero next year, I'll still pay that. But if I earn £10,000 this year and £10,000 next year, I'll pay no tax. So if I earn £20,000 this year and zero next year, I'll pay more tax than if I earn £10,000 each year. And that's what the income tax system is designed to do. It's designed to tax your income in a year. What the savings tax system can allow you to do is to smooth that out. So if I earn my £20,000 this year and I save £10,000, I get tax relief on that, and then I withdraw it next year, I'll be treated just the same as someone who earned £10,000 this year and £10,000 next year. So the way that you structure the taxation of savings allows you to treat income as if it were smoothed across a lifetime. And that's sort of how the current taxation of pensions works. And I think it's one of the reasons why I think at least some of the criticisms of the fact that you can get 40% relief now and pay 20% tax in retirement are misguided, because what it's allowing you to do is to smooth that over your lifetime. If you're only paying 20% tax in retirement, that's because your income isn't high enough at that point to pay more. So the taxation of saving allows you to, as it were, in one sense, overcome one of the inequities in an annual-based tax system, which taxes you a lot more if you happen to be earning a lot in particular years and not in others, or indeed a lot during your life and not during retirement. So that's the second reason. The third reason that taxation of savings is so important in designing the whole tax system is that it sits right in the centre of the taxation of personal income and the taxation of companies. So we've already heard about the corporation tax. That's clearly both a company tax and a taxation on savings. If you have the option to put your money into a closely held company, that can behave a bit like a savings vehicle, and the way that those profits are taxed matters clearly to your income. And clearly, if you're saving in stocks and shares, the way the returns to those, both at the company level and at the personal level, matters to your returns. So the way in which you and this is actually a very complex, incredibly complex issue, is how you can have some kind of neutrality between different forms of personal and corporate income, and it really does come down to the way that you tax savings. So it defines the tax base, it allows you to or not iron out interpersonal differences over the lifetime, it's right at the centre of personal income and taxation of profits. Fourthly, the way that you tax savings clearly matters to the total amount of savings in the economy, and probably more importantly to how savings are held, where how people make a choice between where they put their money. Clearly, if certain kinds of assets are much more tax relieved than others, more money will go into them, and that's exactly what you see. There is a reason why 40% of all household wealth is in pensions and 40% of all household wealth is in housing, owner-occupied housing. It's because of the tax system. And another good chunk of it is in ISAs. The tax system determines essentially where people hold their wealth, and the fact that we have a tax system which is very non-neutral between different sorts of wealth is what drives how that wealth is held. And it matters at that kind of very big level. 40% of all of household wealth is in pensions. It's clearly driven by taxes. Matters at a more micro level. David talked about lifetime ISAs. So what will lifetime ISAs do? Well, for those who are younger than me, who will be able to access these things, they'll be able to put money into a lifetime ISA. We reckon there's £1 to 2 billion of assets that these people hold at the moment that where it would clearly be in their interest to move that money into a lifetime ISA. So that's just, I'm sure a bunch of assets were moved into those things just as assets are moved into things that are currently tax relief. So there's clearly going to be a movement of money as a result of the tax system. We know that the way that the capital gains tax system works clearly gives people big incentives to hold certain sorts of assets, often until death, because of the way the capital gains tax is not paid then. So the way the tax system works implies it matters a lot for how much saving there is and for where that saving is. And then finally, for individuals, clearly the way that the tax system works affects their decisions on how much to save, or when to save during their lifetime, and how much risk to take in their savings. So if you've got something like an ISA, where you get the whole of the return to your saving completely free of tax, there may well be a case for taking more risk with that. And certainly with something like an ISA where you get the full return, there's a case for actually putting quite a lot of effort into choosing those stocks. Effectively, your labour income, the labour that you're putting into choosing where you're going to put that money, doesn't get taxed. But people's welfare through retirement and unemployment and so on matters is determined by the way that we tax things. So I'm not going to say very much about the specifics of the individual bits of the tax system, because David's taken you through that in quite a lot of detail. But let me just offer a couple of general thoughts. One thing that David, three words that did not come out of David's mouth were national insurance contributions, which always mess up taxation of anything, and they certainly mess up the taxation of pensions as they stand at the moment. As I'm sure you're all aware, we have an absurd system where if your employer puts money into your pension, no national insurance contributions are paid ever. And we have this kind of astonishing situation that David described where the taxation of pensions become less generous in a whole series of ways, except the ways in which it should have become less generous. In particular, no effort has been made to reduce the extraordinary national insurance benefit you get from putting your employer putting money into a pension. No change to the tax-free lump sum. But big reductions in the total amount where you get income tax relief. And just to bring out a bit more clearly just what that means in terms of the relationship between pension saving and saving in an ISA, 10 years ago you could put about 30 times as much into a pension as you could put into an ISA. Now, well, sort of next year, you'll be able to put twice as much in, and if you're a high enough earner, only half as much into a pension as an ISA as you can into an ISA. So whilst we didn't move to pension ISAs in the budget, we are moving a long, long way in that direction in the sense of the balance of where tax relief lies for a situation, as I said, in which 30 times as much into a pension, in which most people can now only put twice as much into a pension. I wouldn't be surprised if that gap continues, if that gap continues to close. So those are that really is a big, I think, and radical change. And finally, just to say on the LISA, on the lifetime ISA, it is now the case, for the first time, I think, or certainly for the first time in about 30 years, that if you can put money into a lifetime ISA and you're a basic rate taxpayer, you're better off putting it into that than you are into a pension in terms of the way that the tax system works. And that's the first time that's been true as a result of the tax system for at least 30 years, which is a big change in the way that these things, work. I can say a lot more about some of the changes that we're seeing. I'm sure we'll get those in questions. What I really wanted to tell you, and I hope you now understand, is why economists are so excited by this particular subject.